WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our 30 days and 30 crab cakes brought to you by our friends at Raskin Global. Leonard Raskin will be here a little later on in the week. I'm wearing the shirt. We are getting around eating gold watermelon. We are eating crustacean of all types. I'm going to be in every county before the month is over. And one thing I've been doing on the road is reading like a lot of stuff. And it's football season. It's training camp. Luke is in Owings Mills with his press credential, sweating, masking, asking, all of that kind of stuff. Saw a piece that was so unique to the things that I've been reading lately, certainly in the sports space about gambling. Danny Funt writes for the Columbia Journal Review. You could find him out on Twitter, places that people gather. All In was the piece that I found at CJR.org, how gambling swallowed sports media. Hey, that's me, Danny. I'm sports media. What's going on, man? Where do you hail from? Where is home for you, my friend?
I'm in Brooklyn right now. Good morning. Glad to be with you.
You got better pizza than most of us, unless we've been to Pizza John's in Essex, of course. I mean, this piece is – I haven't read a piece like this, and I think in the modern era – I've had a media pass for 30 years. I've seen touts sniffing around Super Bowl radio row. I've never been a big gambling guy, and I always recount this story of when I was youthful in my 20s. Marvin Lewis and I were sitting in his old office at the old dump out in Owings Mills, a little chalkboard in there, and we're watching film, and it was some crazy thing happened in a Vinny Testaverde game in 1996 or 97. And I don't forget Marvin. He always had a projector and his clicker. He looked up at me. He's like, I can't believe people gamble on this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I mean, the insider-outsider part of the amount of money and the fact that I can use this to gamble anytime, any place, this has become a scary insider trading situation. And dude, I'm going to be honest, you're the only one I've ever heard that wrote about it. So I needed to reach to you and talk to you about your research in this, especially when you're bringing out Ian Rappaport and injury reports and where players are going to go and things you can gamble on legally in Las Vegas, where the Ravens kick off the season in 4 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for pointing that out. I mean, listen, football and gambling have had a wink-wink relationship for a really long time, right? For decades. I mean,
are you talking about the intangibles, Greek? Is that what you're talking about? The intangibles?
Yeah. Obviously, goes back to the Greek.
I was 8 years old in 1976, and Daddy, what's -3 on the little white sheet you brought home from work? You know?
Yeah. It was hilarious for me to learn a little bit about that. I mean, back then, you know, it was totally forbidden to mention a point spread on the air. You know, the Greek picked winners. He picked, the final score, but it was very wink, wink, like I said, right? It's not something the NFL or the networks wanted to embrace out in the open. Nevertheless, you know, they put out injury reports. Obviously, that's not for the opposing team. That's for gamblers, even though they would be reluctant to admit that. But now, as
they're just being honest with the fan base in case you perhaps want to make an investment, right?
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. Bill Belichick is being very honest with the fan base with this injury report. You got it. Now that the Supreme Court basically paved the way for legalization and more than 24 states have gone ahead and legalized, including Maryland, the leagues just see an epic cash opportunity. And as I pointed out in the piece, in so many different ways, this is just a scandal waiting to happen.
Yeah, let's talk about some scandals. I've been on the air. It's my 30th year, hence the 30 crab cakes. I know I look younger than that, especially when I shave. I remember the Tim Donaghy thing. I mean, we've always heard Black Sox and all of that type of stuff. I've always been queasy about all of this in regard to gambling and in regard to people that don't make a lot of money, like officials, that they would be first in. I remember at one point Joe Flacco was going to come do an event with me, and this is when Maryland Live just existed. And the thought to bring him to the Prime Rib there, which is the restaurant adjacent to the casino, 8 months after he won the Super Bowl, to come in and do a charity event, and whether he could literally walk into the casino or not was forebode, you know, like, and this went on forever with football people to say, you know, even I remember watching John. I ran into John Madden on the street in front of Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, just literally crossing the street with his ball cap down as he sort of, you know, he was an older man then. This is 15 years ago. And just thinking, NFL people in Vegas. That's interesting. I was in Vegas in 1998 during the San Diego, New York Super Bowl. And when the, or excuse me, the World Series, when it ended, I flew to Vegas and the NBA was having a tiff with ownership. The boys weren't getting along. Muggsy and Charles Barkley were all over at the Rio, and it's where the Players Association decided to declare war. And I thought, and then the NBA plays like all-star games there. I mean, the slippery slope to how we got a hockey team there. I skated the Stanley Cup with the Caps in Las Vegas one night, to the fact that the Ravens are kicking off a new stadium with the Las Vegas Raiders. It really has moved dramatically, you know, just in this century alone, right? And we always saw this in Europe, where at Wimbledon you could go behind and have strawberries and cream and bet on Bjorn Borg if you wanted to, right?
Yeah, no, the UK is way ahead of us, but it couldn't be more dramatic and it couldn't be happening more quickly. I mean, the fact that we were just saying, you know, it used to be totally forbidden to even mention a spread on air, you know. People like Al Michaels kind of hint at it, but it wasn't something that
Chris
they would
Berman
do.
Chris Berman wore the hat with the Swami. That whole thing was a gambling.
Yeah,
problem,
yeah.
Right?
You wouldn't do it out in the open. Now you've got all the leagues talking about alternate broadcasts that are entirely gambling focused. You know, you turn on Monday Night Football and the announcers tell it, you know, calling the game through the lens of a gambler. That's as stark a change as it gets, right?
Well, the money, let's follow the money, because that's what I'm always doing. The leagues made enough money. Art Modell made enough money selling tickets in Cleveland and suites in Cleveland and like all of that, that the notion that he would be involved in the rub of 3 points one way or another, that he would have any hand in that or take from that 50 years ago. Pete Rozelle was clearly against that because mobsters, I'm sure, in the 50s and 60s had rubbed up against NFL owners. I mean, Art spent enough time, there's enough pictures with Art with the Rat Pack to know that mobsters were always in on this. Dude, there's so much more money now, right? And it's so much more. All you have to have is one official, one running back, one in a basketball game. It could be all sorts of ways. But for the NFL, give me some of the, I shouldn't say guardrails, because I don't even know where the guardrails are, other than, are you honest? Okay, you better be honest. That's the guardrail at this point. There's no drug test for this.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're talking money just quickly. You know, all the leagues are worried about TV viewership. That's their cash cow, right? Their deals with the networks. Anyone who's had a bet and been watching, you know, meaningless, you know, Jets, Redskins, week 7
game. You can't
game.
Say that word.
Yeah. Jets football team, my bad. Obviously.
We call them the Hail here.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anyone who's had money on a game that's otherwise meaningless knows how you're on the edge of your seat when you've got skin in the game, right? So that's what the leagues and the networks have realized, is that gamblers watch a ton more games than even a passionate fan. So, you know, this is a great opportunity for them to revive their TV audience. It's a great opportunity to get people to sit through blowouts if there's a prop bet that they've got that makes them want to wait it out. And you talk about guardrails. Yeah, the thing that struck me and why this seemed like, as I said, a scandal in the making, is that it's not just who's going to win, who's going to lose. It's pretty tough to throw a game or, you know, even if you're a quarterback, it's pretty tough and pretty outrageous to throw, you know, your team's going to win, you make them lose. There's tens of thousands of prop bets every day on DraftKings and FanDuel. It would be way more conceivable to say, okay, I'm going to fiddle with how many catches X receiver gets in the third quarter, right? Or I'm going to fiddle with whether we make a field goal in the second half. That stuff, again, it would take a really
but it's the exotic things, player. It's, more than like, yeah, will this guy get traded? And there's inside information from agents that would know and let their buddies go make 50 grand, steal some money from Vegas before a trade's made. I mean, we're not just talking about 3 points at the end of a football
no,
game.
No, definitely not. And that's that, you know, I started my piece with this story of Ian Rappaport breaking the news that the Niners weren't dead set on Mac Jones, number three, right? That they all along were in love with Trey Lance. Gamblers, despite how obsessively they try to figure this stuff out, didn't know that the odds on Lance were, dramatically different than come draft day. And if Rappaport gets that news, yeah, he can go on and report it and you wouldn't know anything was out of the ordinary, but he could tell his buddy, hey, place a bet on Lance going number three, 5 minutes before he hits, you know, publish on his tweet. And yeah, he could make a ton of money off of that. Now, Ian doesn't seem like that kind of guy. He says he doesn't bet. But yeah, as you said, that is such a fertile ground for funny business with gambling. It's got to be going on now if it's not going to happen in the near future.
I mean, I've been on the radio 30 years, Danny. I famously, I bet $25 on a Patriots game in 2004 because I was stuck in Vegas on bye week or something. I know enough about this to know they don't even know who's going to win, right? So or that they would have a great idea of how they're going to play in any particular game. Danny Fun is here. He is a writer of interest, Columbia Journal Review, CJR.org. The piece is all in. It really is about the league's drinking in this money and the newness of it. Let's go back 5-6 years ago when that NFL season happened and every ad was a DraftKings or FanDuel. And we found out Bob Kraft owned part of this and the other owners were in on all of that. What's the reality in 2021? There's no journalism on this because all the ESPN guys are bought off, the NFL.com guys. You got to be kidding me, right? There are no journalists left to even sort of sniff around where all this, because this is so new. All I know is when baseball season started this year and the Orioles can't get anybody to watch and they're going to lose 110 games this year, somebody's going to make money off of that if you know how to gamble on it. Just bet against the Orioles, you'll make money. But I started to see lots and lots of baseball, that hot chick that shows up every half inning and from the internet who tells me to gamble on baseball. I've been watching baseball 52 years, dude. I'm from Dundalk, okay? I'm hard scrabble. They ran numbers. The Italian guys on the East, all that stuff that you read about. I've never known anybody in my life that's bet on a baseball game. Like, even the degenerate swami types that I know don't bet on baseball. They don't like baseball. They don't follow baseball. It feels like baseball was like dying to get people interested enough to start gambling on it. Baseball's been sort of the opposite, right? And not just Black Sox or Pete Rose, but like the culture of baseball isn't gambling unless you're in the outfield and there's 18 people in the seats taking a dollar and y'all put a dollar in and somebody hit the first home run. You know what I mean? Like that sort of wagering I've seen in left field, but I have never in my life, and I've attended a couple thousand baseball games, I have never been anywhere where I heard somebody said, I got 7.5 on Morgan tonight. He's starting, you know. I got 150 on him. I've never heard of anybody betting on baseball, and it feels like baseball's trying. People to be interested in baseball first before they're worried about gambling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 162 game season, you just can't pick winners and losers. It's a total crapshoot.
Here's now a good starting pitching's not even a denominator anymore, right?
Yeah, exactly. Here's a good story for you, though. So obviously, baseball for a while has been freaking out about pace of play, right? It's too slow for the modern fan. In the minor leagues, they're doing all sorts of stuff to try to testing rules to try to speed up the game.
That guy on second base in the 10th inning. Boy, where did he come up with that? Who test tubes this? Who talks about it?
Yeah, well, it's been, you know, priority number one for the league, you'd think, for quite a while. A couple months ago, Rob Manfred was giving an interview and he said that he got a phone call from Adam Silver, NBA commissioner. And Silver said, hey, Rob, you guys need to quit worrying about pace of play. Your sport is perfect for in-game gambling. You've got these, you know, 30-second breaks or whatever between pitches.
Is that the way they do it in cricket? Do they gamble in cricket that way?
A cricket match takes what, like 8 hours?
I guess you got nothing better to do.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's a lot of money transacted. I don't know anything about cricket other than the wicket and I see it.
Yeah.
But it feels to me like that's probably the rub in India and in these parts of the world where it's so popular that it's like a horse race every minute, right? Or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Isn't that weird though that baseball thinks the solution to pace of play is to force fans to be so bored that they pull their phone out and bet on, is this guy going to get a hit? Is the runner going to steal second? Is the next pitch going to be a breaking ball? I mean, that seems like a strange and greedy solution to what we all agree is something they might want to fix for ordinary fans. Don't you agree?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Who owns all this? I mean, we talk about FanDuel and Draft. Is the league in on 20% of this? The league wants money from the action either through media revenue, you know, by advertising from us, or the actual act of it. Where is the overlay between the league shield and its officials, the spreads in Vegas, and how close, because it was always out here, you know, Vegas, and now it's clearly I have a flight to Vegas in 3 weeks to watch them kick a football in the air that I can gamble on, not in the casino across the street, but right here in the press box if I wish to, right on the Wi-Fi.
I know, it's incredible. Yeah, I mean, DraftKings and FanDuel spend over $1 billion a year on marketing. Their entire strategy is just, we need to own the market share of gambling and we'll spend whatever it takes to do that. The leagues are not content just to get that money, right? They're not going to let other companies eat off their product and not wet their beaks beyond these huge marketing checks. They've tried things like selling their stats as proprietary information. Hasn't gone great. Some of the leagues are trying to put gambling in the arenas, in the stadiums. Maybe they'll have, you know, like a sports book, that fans can go to, you know, they get bored. As we discussed, the TV deals are, you know, totally going to revolve around gambling opportunities, but yeah, you're right. The leagues are going to want to get as big a piece of this pie as they possibly can.
Danny Funt is here. What else do you write about, dude, other than like interesting, insightful gambling pieces in sports?
Great question. I do some stuff about businesses trying to be more sustainable. I cover the media in all sorts of different ways. I wrote a piece about how sports media came around on fighting sports. You know, it parallels gambling in an interesting way. It used to be this moral freakout about covering boxing, covering MMA for decades, going back to, you know, mid-20th century. And then as fans got into it and they saw a huge money opportunity, all of that moral reservation went out the window. And
yeah,
you know,
I'm amazed with the MMA thing. Like I am amazed at how many places that are family places I can walk into at 11:30 in the morning and want a club sandwich and an iced tea. And I can watch two people beat the shit out of each other in HD over my head and bleed all over each other in a way that Vince McMahon put an X over Baron von Roschke in 1970. I'm just geezing at this point, but you know, there's another thing that gambling, right? Gambling on that has taken off from where boxing was back in the day, right? That's another thing that's set up essentially for you to gamble on and have media money.
Yeah. I mean, again, talk about a transformation. You go from, maybe we'll put a fight on at MMA fight on at 2 a.m. on a Sunday. Now ESPN covers it, you know, as enthusiastically as they cover any sport. So again, if there's money there and if these networks and powers that be think, they can wet their beaks, all moral reservations go out the window.
Yeah. Morality, the gambling thing, all the taboos, even putting logos on their jerseys now, which, you know, they did that over with the Euros. Danny Funt is here. You can find him at CJR.org, a contributor to Columbia Journal Review, also writing out on Twitter and Facebook and all sorts of places. Hey, I try to follow the smartest people. And when things are getting shared on my timeline and I find new people, you've been a wonderful guest. I now have someone to ask for Brooklyn pizza recommendations when I'm done with my my crab cake stuff. But we'll get back up to Brooklyn soon, man. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for coming on and being a great foil. Please read the piece, everyone. It's all in at CJR. Danny Funt, our guest. Dan, stay safe up there in Brooklyn, all right?
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I won't be gambling in Vegas next month. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah. Be safe.
I think it's a gamble to showing up in Vegas at this point. I am Nestor. I am doing 30 crab cakes in 30 days out on the trail, Route 50 East, 68 West, going to places I've never been, including Southern Maryland this weekend. I went to a great restaurant on Monday night, Maggie's in Westminster, had a delicious crab cake there. James Taylor this week, Jimmy Buffett this week. We got music happening, Foreigner Train, hitting a lot of music this month, but hitting a lot of crab cakes. You can find all of our work. And find me, Nasty at WNST.net, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, posting a lot. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.